When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, hello and welcome to a very tired, very worn out, three strong team, the Flow Grappling team. Apologies in advance because, how about you guys, but I'm dead. World Championships 2019, possibly the best ever, but I barely made it to the other side alive. You guys are on the road even longer with the Road to Worlds. Are you here physically? Are you here in spirit?
Yeah, barely.
Barely.
We made it. What a week, huh? What a crazy week. It was an insane week. So much jiu-jitsu packed into those days. 4 days at the World Championships inside that pyramid.
It felt like 3 months.
It felt like 3 months inside that pyramid from like 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. like every day. A wild weekend. So from the blue belts to the black belts, it's like I'm still trying to process it all. I really am.
I'm actually not here, so. No, it was amazing storylines across the board, like you were saying, blue through black. It was so fun to watch. Some unexpected upsets, some guys we thought would do really well, complete the task. So, man, still processing all that went down, but what a weekend, huh?
It's a lot to digest.
It really is, man. It's like we build up the entire year for it, you know? And then I can't believe it's over now. But now's a fun part, too. Now you kind of get to see where all the chips lay, where all the chips fall kind of afterwards, you know? We get to see where everybody gets promoted and whatnot.
That's such
a fun part, you know? You can start speculating for next year, next year's black belts and everything like that. I don't even know where to start.
That's the thing, right? At the end of each day, we would, when the final match was over, we would take a deep breath and we would go, wow.
Let's get out of here.
What a day.
That's what we would say.
Yeah. Time to bounce.
But it would always be a case of like, wow, what a day. Did you see that happen? And usually it would be like, that was today?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, that was only like 4 hours ago, but I could have sworn that was like the day before yesterday.
Man, those 12 mats for the first 3 days. It's 12 mats.
Well, it's a nearly overwhelming amount of jiu-jitsu to take in, but I feel that, especially if you look at the event coverage on site, if you look at floorgrappling.com, go to the events page and then go and look at the stuff that we put up from Worlds, I think we did a pretty good job of covering it. I hope we did.
Yeah, those guys are great. I couldn't tell you what happened, though. Go back and read.
We're working on it.
We're working on it. But I think now is the opportunity for us to talk about maybe some of the standout moments, because there were so many, you know, and there's a lot to talk about, and we'll be talking about it for weeks, I'm sure. But, you know, there were so many amazing standout moments, and we could talk about everything. We could talk about blue belts, purple belts, brown belts, black belts. We could talk about the men's divisions. We could talk about the women's divisions, and I'm sure we would still miss some. So, apologies. We're not going to cover every single thing that happened at Worlds today, but
Start with one, though, which is...
You go ahead. Pick one, Chase.
So I'm going to steal this one because I know everyone's mind. Mikey Musumeci.
His
third world title.
First.
Come on.
We all wanted it.
It's got to be the biggest story out of Worlds.
It was incredible.
And, of course, his sister also claiming a world title after not even really training that much, going to law school, full-time student. Incredible.
Yeah. So actually, a double entry into the history books there, because Mikey was, as you say, first ever American to win three world titles. And his sister, that was her first, but it's the first time a brother and sister have ever taken black belt gold medals in the same world championships. Incredible.
Mm-hmm. And I believe we have a clip of Mikey winning the world championships. The Mikey clip one, we can play that one.
Oh, let's take a look at this.
This is Mikey Musumeci who we're talking about. Mikey, let's look for that one. But yeah, like you guys said, here he is right here, man. This one is happened so quick. It was so quick.
I'm glad you were filming. Yeah, it didn't last long.
But
so, again, another entry into the history books. Fastest submission in a black belt world championships final.
Wow.
12
wow.
seconds.
And
the previous record
over.
done. The previous record was 18 seconds. We thought that was pretty fast. Mikey's like, no, I can do better. 12 seconds. Cuts it in half almost.
Yeah, and I think the final here is something that like really encapsulates, I think, Mikey, because he doesn't look, you know, he's kind of an unassuming guy, but make no mistake, Mikey is coming after that submission. Oh, he is a submission hunter, you know, and 12 seconds. Wow, great accomplishment there. Incredible.
I think the thing about Mikey as well that stands out for me is that he's like a really unlikely fan favorite, right? Mm. He's a, you know, you think about the sort of the typical jiu-jitsu guy, and it's usually like a Leandro or a Buchecha, that kind of like the super jacked, you know, the guy, he's got a bit of a swagger about him. He's kind of like, you know, the badass and stuff. Mikey's not any of that.
He's got pasta swagger, dude. That guy loves pasta.
he's the complete opposite of that kind of like stereotypical image that many people have of the jiu-jitsu athlete. And yet, people love him. Americans love him, of course, but the Brazilians also are like, they're all about Mikey. We're like, why do you think that is?
I mean, just look, how can you not like Mikey? But I think we got a clip here of a great match from Mikey against Bruno Malfacini that we can check out a little bit too. But it's just hard not to like this guy, right? I mean, it's been a special experience just like these last 3 years watching him create his legacy, make history time and time again, you know, and I think that we're all along for the ride, and everybody's like, is really understanding, I think, you know, how good Mikey is, and this guy could be one of the best of all times.
And, you know, the fact that he beat Bruno Malfacini in the semi-final, the 10-time world champion, Bruno Malfacini, you know, one of the most dominant guys, pound for pound, in the entire sport. Mikey takes him out in the semi-final. Absolutely incredible achievement. But it was a little controversial moment in that match, right? Mm-hmm. The fake handshake to the... What was that all about, Chase?
Oh, it's a classic move. I hit Reed with that all the time. I had to say. But, yeah, a little bit heat there. I don't know the full story. There seems to be some swirling of rumors of other stuff going on behind the scenes.
Mikey seemed pretty surprised by it too, right?
Mikey seemed surprised, and Mikey's a genuine guy. I don't know. I can't speak for Bruno. Definitely seemed to be unnecessary, but at the same time, adds a little bit of flavor to the event. Definitely had people talking. Enriches Mikey's story to getting the gold. So, you know what? Bit of a sour moment there for Bruno, but he's still one of the greatest of all time. I don't think it's going to really, you know, tarnish any of his legacy. He's still one of the greats. So.
Yeah, and the crowd didn't like it, though, huh?
This moment that we're talking about, I believe it's just coming up here in just a second. This is right here at the end of the match. Mm. You know, Mikey, that last sweep that we saw was the kind of the match-winning sweep. It's 10-8. These are the final seconds, and this is the what happened here at the end. You know, obviously, heat of the moment, you know, right after it happened.
Ooh. Oh,
there it is.
What do you guys? Mikey's like, what? Yeah.
You know, he had the moment. And he did put out an Instagram post apologizing, right?
Something so, like
that's
that.
That's the appropriate.
Kind of. Not really.
There's more to the story.
Gotcha.
I know they used to
train back in the day because, of course, Mikey's from Florida as well. And I know they used to train
Bruno
back in the day.
Bruno's based in Florida. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or they had trained together back in the day.
Mm. I think Mikey should wait maybe just like a full 3-4 seconds, though. I don't know. Some guys, like Bruno's a 10-time world champion, just lost for the first time in God knows how long.
Stuff.
He might need a moment, you know?
Yeah,
so,
Right.
Just throwing it out there.
But. Yeah. No, it's a good point. The crowd didn't like it, though. And there were many comments from the fans about, you know, the unsportsmanlike behavior in faking the handshake and stuff, but I think that they quashed it.
I did notice, even
after that kind of like occurred and Mikey and Bruno, they walked off the mat talking to each other. I gotta say, it was really cool because Michael Lange was right there at Matt's side. I think he was coaching Bruno, right? And as Mikey comes off, Michael goes straight up to him and makes sure that he gives Mikey a big firm handshake, like a legit recognition of job well done. Mm. You know, you may have beat the guy that I was coaching, but big handshake.
Michael Lange, of course, one of the greats, who looks like he retired over the weekend. Some big news there. A couple guys left their belts on the mats.
Three.
Tarsus Humphreys and Kavaka.
Yeah. So a memorable world for many reasons, right? But those were three of the three incredible veterans, all of them past world champions, retiring. It's kind of it's an interesting like tradition, right? We've seen it once or twice, but we haven't seen it much, right? Mm.
Definitely happened more than this world championship than I'd seen before. I feel like, you know, we'd seen Hamolo put his belt on the mat in the past. Mm-hmm. I believe maybe Victor Estima put his belt on the mat at Worlds.
I believe that. I think he took it back. I think he made a I think he made a post the same day saying like, oh yeah, you know, I'm gonna do something else maybe.
Yeah, fair enough. I gotta say that the definitely that was a theme though, right? The older generation leaving their belts on the mat is stands out. But it's a symbol of a great thing that we saw at the World Championships, and that was this great generational shift. I think that we saw, right? We saw a couple of really sort of big up-and-coming stars, first year black belts, do incredibly well. Everybody, of course, talking about Kainan Duarte, the 21-year-old from Atos who beat Leandro Lowe in the heavyweight final, and Mateus Gabriel, the youngster from Checkmat, submitting Marcio Andre in the featherweight final. Did anybody expect that? Did either of you predict that?
I did.
I can't say I predicted the submission.
Really, I'm going to go back and watch the preview show for Worlds to see if either of you called that.
Reed's already deleted them. Also, we got to throw out Mai Sebastos' name, another first-year black belt taking home a world title.
Taking out
Rikako Yuasa, right? That's how you say your last name.
And she's like a million-time world champion.
She had the last 4 years running. And so Maisa went upset that streak. So impressive performance on her end as well.
Yeah, incredible. And then on top of it, though, you got... Say that the generational shift, right? Mateus is a great example. I believe we have a clip here of Mateus Gabriel versus Marcio Andre.
I want to see their
final.
That was a wild match as well because it was one of those typical featherweight technical battles where they're really going at it and it's extremely intricate. There's a lot of like leg fighting and stuff. And let's be honest, we don't see that many submissions in the featherweight division at the highest levels as it is. There was one standout, actually. Isaac Duerdlein hit that really nasty footlock on Rafael Mansour. I think it was in the quarterfinal, possibly. Very nasty. But in the final of the featherweight world championships, almost never. I mean, probably not for like 10 years or more. So, but yeah, Mateus Gabriel, the way that he dived on that on the submission. It was a kind of a weird one, right?
We have the clip. Hopefully we can find that one. Mateus Gabriel clip is what we're looking for there. It's a great, in the final versus Mateus versus Marcio Andre. Here it is. There we go. Pull it up.
So Mateus in the blue and a bit of an unusual one, right? I think in the last minute or so, Marcio, he opened up his game and maybe gave the...
Yeah, right here. Oh, that was so sick.
It jumps right into it.
Yeah, you don't see that very often. Reverse triangle from top.
And he does that kind of like...
That arm crush.
Twisting arm beautiful. Block thing. Wagner likes that, I believe, as well.
Wow.
But like you said, man, I don't think any of us really did expect this. This is a kid who was a brown belt this time last year.
Yeah.
You know, he won Pans. He beat Jameel Hill there. And I think that really opened everybody's eyes to how good this guy is. And one of the things that like strikes me so much about Mateus Gabriel is that he's so confident. His confidence is just like sky high from when I met him at or when I was talking to him at Pans, you know, and he told me then he was like, you know, just wait, you watch, you know, I'm gonna be world champion. And
and he was.
There he is.
And he is, you know, and man, that was a really cool one to watch, definitely.
With the Mateus Gabriel as well, some of the names that he's actually beaten, because he's only been competing as a black belt since, I think, around about November last year. I think his first black belt match was Paulo Miao, right? It was in Spider last year.
Not the easiest draw.
No, and he went head-to-head with Paulo, and I think it was a 6-4 match or something like that. And now, if that was a sign of Mateus' potential as a black belt, you know, it really was. It was like a foreboding this incredible career, because he went on. He beat like guys like the 2018 silver medalist Leo Saggioro. He beat the 2018 world champion Jameel Hill. He beat the veteran Caixinho. He beat Gianni Grippo, right? And then goes and submits Marcio Andre himself, I think a 3-time European champion and a world silver medalist also. Just phenomenal for a kid who's just coming up to the 1-year mark of his black belt.
Yep, and then another guy there, like we said, Kainan Duarte. I think we have a clip from Kainan's final as well. I mean, it doesn't get much tougher than a final versus Leandro Lowe. You know, I mean, Leandro Lowe is built for the finals of the World Championship. He's been in so many of them. So for him to go in and beat Leandro Lowe in the finals there, I think that really put a statement on, you know, Kainan's first year at
Black Belt. And man, what a fun match that was, too. Sometimes finals can be kind of a grind, you know, and that was back and forth, some sweeps from both guys. I really had a fun time watching that bout.
I mean, it's no secret we're hot on Kynan, right? We've been talking about him a lot this last year. And of course, for good reason. The kid's been winning everything. He's
Euros,
won
Pans.
No-Gi Worlds, Europeans, Pans, World Pro, Kasai. So he's flip-flopping between Gi and No-Gi. He's already been invited for ADCC later this year as well. But winning Worlds is different, right? You walk into that super stacked heavyweight division. And you had guys like Leandro Lowe, Jackson Souza, Patrick Gaudio, all these big names in the division. Kind of goes out there and he does the deed. And man, he looked just phenomenal, right?
Another 22-year-old kid, you know, I believe, around there.
But there was one man missing from that division that may have met Kynan in the semifinal. Unfortunately, we saw Keenan Cornelius look amazing in the event, but get injured in that, I believe, a quarterfinal with Leandro Lowe in the absolute division.
Semifinal,
excuse me. That's right. He took third. What a match with Nicholas Maragalli.
Yeah, so Keenan signed up for the absolute. Now, I feel that was something of a bold move, considering everything that's been happening in the last couple of months, with him leaving Atos, or being asked to leave, and then having to rustle up kind of the training over the last couple of weeks that like he has. But it obviously lit a fire under him, right? And he seemed super motivated to go to Worlds and to, you know, put on an amazing performance. But I feel that would he have walked away this year with a gold medal had he not gone for the absolute, right? Because that heavyweight division, you can look at the list of people in that division, and he's beaten every single one of those major names. He's beaten Patrick Gojo. Gaudio may be the only person he hasn't beat, because there was that whole thing at Worlds last year. But he's beaten Jackson Souza.
He hasn't beaten Tim Spriggs. Leandro Lowe either.
He has a win over Leandro way back. Yeah. But he has wins over Kynan. He has wins over Leandro. He has wins over Jackson Souza. He has wins over Spriggs. He has wins over all the major names in that division. And you have to think, man, he was one of the favorites to take gold in that division. And yet, he went out and he had a freaking war with Nicholas Maragalli in the quarterfinal of the absolute division that he won, which is freaking incredible. But then the match against Leandro hurts his ribs. Now he's out.
Yeah, I think
I was going to say that match of Nicholas Maragalli seemed like such more of a physical toll. Like it would be more of a battle than Leandro's. Leandro was kind of slow and grindy, and yet, you know, that's where the injury occurred. It just goes to show you can't really see everything out there.
Yeah, it's weird. It's for whatever reason, you know, Leandro has Keenan's number there very recently, just hasn't been able to get past him. So I think he probably maybe had a better chance at super heavyweight to be a world champion than heavyweight, right? Because he's beaten Muhammad Ali, he's beaten Nicholas Maragalli, and who's the other?
Gutenberg Pereira, Gutenberg, all those tough guys. Yeah.
Yep. And
We're in what if territory here, aren't we? But I gotta say, you're looking at the way that the bracket played out as well. I feel like Kynan beat Leandro fair and square, right? And he beat him with great technique and poise and, you know, focus that you would expect from this young champion. But Leandro's match with Jackson Souza in the semifinal, wow, what a battle that was, right?
Absolutely, yeah, that was one of my favorite matches of the event. You know, Leandro actually got penalized for doing that thing he does where he plays very close to the boundaries to avoid takedowns. Very, very smart strategy, but he got penalized, and that gave Jackson the lead. And I think the last minute of action left, so Leandro had to score, and this forced this crazy scramble. Man, it was so fun. So if you guys haven't seen that match, go back and check it out on flowgrappling.com.
You dug it out as well. This is actually the first time Jackson Souza and Leandro ever fought.
Crazy. I couldn't believe it when I read it. And I scoured Vegeta Heroes. I did all my YouTube research, and I was like, man, these guys, I don't think they fought each other.
How has that happened?
Leandro did move up late. I mean, recently, true. I guess. So there is a little bit of a size difference there for most of their careers at Black Belt.
But Leandro's got like 200 matches or something, and he never met Jackson, but
I thought Jackson's style, and it played out that way, matched up really well with Leandro.
It did,
you know, Leandro likes to pull guard, but he's a little bit, you know, cagey or slow to engage sometimes. And Jackson's quick, man. Jackson is so fast off a guard pull, and we saw him score that way actually. So Really fun matches. So many we could talk about, but I really enjoy almost all of Leandro's matches. You know, he didn't get the result he wanted. You know, double silver, boohoo, I guess. But it was a great performance all around for me as well.
Boohoo, indeed. To be honest, I'm pretty sure that Leandro is very upset with that. I mean, the silver medal in the absolute division, fair enough. He straight up passed that on to Buchecha. You know, he declined to meet, but he looked completely out of gas in the match with Kynan, right?
Like, so he does never in all his matches.
No, but we say that every one of his matches. We say that Leandro always looks like he's dying, but I literally have never seen him in the middle of the mat with his hands on his knees.
I don't know, man. I think you gotta go back and watch. I think he's always giving it all his all. That's his style, man.
He comes off and just collapses.
I don't know. I think he's. I hate to say it, but I think he's slowing down. You know, Leandro's. I think he's 30 years of age this year, and you know, he's always had that high paced game. You know, a high paced lifestyle from what we heard as well. You know, and it could be that it's catching up with him, and you know, up against those fresh young 21-year-olds.
Everyone ages. You know, you can't deny that. But I think. He's still right there, man.
Still making world finals.
He's having some bad luck with injuries, too. You know, he was kind of holding his knee funny. I don't know if anything happened there or not, but I feel like the way he plays the game is just he throws his entire body into it almost more than other people. He's more aggressive and he's more explosive, and he might need to change that as he gets a little older. That might take its toll. He's not 21 like Kynan, who can just bounce back from anything. So I don't know, but what else happened? What else happened to Worlds?
There's a lot happened, actually. Women's divisions proved some of the most interesting as well. The women's finals, man, we had a ton of submissions. One of the ones that that stood out to me was Beatrice Mesquita's TP choke. That was solid, that was freaking awesome. Andressa Sintra tapping out Luisa Montero with a choke from the back. Didn't expect that one either. I believe that this is Andressa's. We have a clip right here.
We have that clip, that one you're talking about here. We can play that. Great.
So Luisa, obviously, we know that she's an incredible competitor. She's been right at the top of the tree of women's jiu-jitsu. She actually made it to our list of she was in the top five greatest of all time female jiu-jitsu competitors based on accomplishments. But she went up in weight, and I feel that meeting a competitor bigger, heavier, younger in Andressa Sintra was maybe her downfall, huh?
It definitely took its toll to weight. I mean, in a 10-minute match, Luisa was up early in the match and was controlling, but you know, and I think this was, like you said, the last minute or last 2 minutes of competition, and you know, Andressa was able to turn the tide, make the momentum go in her favor. Really impressive performance from her.
Yeah, I mean, Luisa was getting after it with those leg attacks and stuff. But
yeah, going for toe holds.
Yeah, this is definitely her game. But yeah, incredible. You mentioned Misa as well there.
She gets that pass. Luisa turtles, gives up the back. And man, once you expose your back, right, who knows what could happen from there.
I think worth mentioning as well, Ana Carolina Vieira, she got a submission over Laura Halleck in the final. And Natchiali De Jesus as well, she got a submission in her heavyweight final against Fernanda Mazzelli. So Ana Carolina Vieira and Natchiali De Jesus, the two champions from last week at IBJJF Worlds, both just received invitations to ADCC this year.
Oh, big news.
That is good news, right? I think those are going to be great additions to the over 60 kilogram.
A lot of those, you know, more IBJJF players, I feel like I've been seeing getting invites. Got Mikey's going to be there. Can't forget about him. Jamil's going to be there. I saw Mateus Denise. It got an invite as well. He's going to be there. So, man.
It'll be fun. It'll be absolutely fun. Natchiali, of course, won Nogi Worlds as well. So,
Forgetting the finals now and forgetting the champions, because we've talked a lot about them on the website as well as to, you know, some of these guys. But standout moments just from the tournament in itself. Any belt color, any division, go.
You know who I want to give a shout out to is Rodrigo Freitas in the lightweight division. I think he's even Masters 2 eligible. He beat the 2019 Brazilian national champion, Igor Rodriguez, by submission.
Wow.
That's incredible. This guy has been doing, a veteran, been doing it for years. And I remember looking over and being like, oh my God, because he came back. There was an early flurry from Rodriguez. And I'm like, okay, you know, that's probably how this is going to play out. But Freitas battled back, got the submission win to face Lucas Leprie in the semi. So that was really cool to see.
Something interesting about Rodrigo Freitas as well is he doesn't actually have any real credentials in the gi. He's really much more known as a no-gi guy. Huh. You know, he's like placed second at No-Gi Worlds, won No-Gi Pans a bunch of times. But I don't think he's ever even hit the podium at a major gi tournament like Euros, Pans, or Worlds. And sounds like this is possibly one of his best tournaments ever. He beat Pika Pau in the opening round. Then, like you said, beat Igor Rodriguez. Two young guys who are extremely credentialed. Both previous Brazilian national champions.
Incredible. So that is super good, cool, huh? To see, actually. It was a fun little wrinkle that I don't think anyone would have predicted besides Freitas himself. So, well done.
How about you, Reed?
Oh, man. There's so many things I want to shout out. Real quick, you got to give a shout out. We're talking about the new generation. You got to give it out. You got to give a shout out to the guy who's defying the odds, Lucas Lepre, who's still out there winning world championships, still beating back the next generation, beating back the young guns year after year. But you know what I think was one of the most special moments of the tournament there was Jonathan Alves getting his black belt. I'm not sure if you guys saw that, you guys witnessed that. But
interesting way to promote somebody.
But Jonathan won his lightweight division. You know, dominant fashion, if I'm being honest. I watched a lot of his matches, and he, the Barambolo works, it turns out, if your name is Jonathan Alves.
He did it at Pans as well. I think in at Pans, I put it together a little highlight. I think in something like five matches, he Barambolo'd and submitted every single person in that division. Yep. So how was his run at Worlds?
Yeah, he's looking to Barambolo people and choke people. That's what he does.
He's good at
that's
it.
That's what he does. So yeah, he dominated his division. You know, he didn't win Worlds last year, came back, won Worlds this year as a brown belt. Gi threw the belt onto the mat, if you guys saw on our social media. And, you know, that was a big moment, special moment that I witnessed, one that stuck with me that I liked a lot.
That was pretty special, I gotta say. And, We saw a lot of promotions over the weekend. Sorry, we saw a lot of promotions, but by far that's the one that stands out. When Gi Mendes literally throws like a 3-pointer throw, he's like, we're like, here's your black belt. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
And another, just because we have a clip of it, Victor Hugo. We should play this Victor Hugo Hugo clip. We got to give a shout out to Victor Hugo, king of the brown belts right here. This guy won the ultra heavyweight division and the absolute division. I know this is my third shout out, and you only asked me for one. But Victor Hugo, here he is. This is the absolute final right here against Marcus Ribeiro from Alliance.
Hell of a war.
Yeah, battle. Both
Ribeiro was both the super heavyweight champion,
dudes,
right?
So both big dudes. Here he goes for this knee bar that he's really good at, switches to the toe hold, gets the tap.
Wow, so a submission in the open class final. That's incredible. Victor Hugo, he's definitely one of these new guys coming through on the scene that we expect big things from next year, right? I mean, he won, like, literally, I think he won everything there is to win at brown belt, right?
He won everything.
I want to say he did the double grand slam, actually. Yeah. So.
No, he missed out Europeans.
Did he?
No. I'm pretty sure he won. I'm pretty sure he won double gold in the Europeans, right?
Bring it up, yeah, Chase.
Well, yes. Continue, boys. Sure. Yeah. I'll give a check.
Well, my shout out.
He definitely won double gold at Pans and Brasileiros, now Worlds and Europeans. I'm calling it.
Go ahead. Recalling it.
My shout out goes to Gabriel Arges, middleweight champion. That last 30 seconds.
I thought
we
were saying non-champions. You guys are calling out champions.
Oh,
come
okay.
On,
so I'll switch it up. But I'm going to give him a shout out anyway, quickly.
Sorry, Gabriel. I like you too, Gabriel.
I wrote a little article about the Gabriel Arges, the last second win. Here's a quick preview. You can watch that tomorrow. But
this is a clip of right here we have of the end right here.
Of Gabriel Arges? Oh, quiet. Perfect. Well, here we go. I'm going to talk about it because Gabriel Arges, man, he's going up against Isaac Baez, who's one of the toughest guys to score on in the game, full stop, right? The guy, scrappy as hell, he's got good wrestling, he knows these positions inside out, tons of experience, even being a youngster, and he's the 2018 world champion. Gabriel Arges, of course, 2017 world champion, so he's right there, you know, but Isaac is so difficult to do anything to, and Gabriel is down on advantages. It's 4-4, but he's down an advantage.
This is like the last like 15 seconds, right?
Exactly,
here.
The last 30 seconds of the match, and they're stuck in this 50-50. And Sean Williams and myself were doing commentary for this match, and we were saying, "Man, Gabriel needs to work from here." It's like, but he's stuck in the 50-50. How is he going to get out? Boom! He hits this really nice little slide out the back door, gets this body lock. Puts Isaac down, well, almost puts him down, doesn't quite stabilize the position. Isaac's so hard to score on, almost gets it, almost, boom, advantage goes on
the
board.
Advantage.
And a second advantage because there's so much goes on in that sequence, and takes the match in the last 30 seconds. in the World Championship final. The roof, literally, I thought it was going to come off. The Gracie Barra guys were right behind me. It sounded like a soccer game in Brazil. They were screaming, they were chanting and stuff, they were singing. Incredible moment. One of those amazing, memorable, you know, moments that we get only at the World Championship finals.
What a badass day for Hamelo and the boys, huh? Felipe Pena got a gold as well. So Hamelo must be very happy.
Second World Championship title, yeah. That was very cool.
But by the way,
Batista as
hype.
Well.
It was hype.
Victor Hugo did double gold.
Damn.
Europeans. I know,
oh,
I told you.
There you go. Thank you. Got it.
Yeah, it was a hype atmosphere at Worlds, huh? You know, it always is, and it always just adds that extra little bit. You know, I remember I had a little clip of Muhammad, too, right, where he's like, Worlds is the real deal, you know, and I think that's such a good, really sums things up. Because, like, you know, there's some big matches elsewhere, but, man, at Worlds... Worlds is there's the next level. That's fun atmosphere.
A lot of people just, you know, they realize that there's a lot of songs and a lot of chants going on in the arena and stuff, and it's kind of cool, right? Because each team takes like a section of the bleachers. So you have all the Checkmark guys in the one position, all the Atos guys in the middle, all the Alliance guys on the other side, and always they're in the same spots in the arena.
Yeah.
Just behind me, over my right shoulder, were the GF team guys, who, it should be noted, are the biggest shit talkers in the entire game. Those guys are ruthless with their chants, because a lot of the time it's like, you know, kind of team pride and stuff. You know, a lot of the chants that they say are like, you know, just like, hey, Gracie Barra, or, you know, I am Alliance. It's like that kind of thing. They have like endless just like diss tracks. It's like,
awesome. Nice.
And they have like specific ones about specific people. So, you know, in the middle, just after the match with Isaac and Gabriel Arges, Isaac's walking around and he's on the other side of the gymnasium while the next final going on. And GF team are like, okay, perfect. We're just going to sing a ton of songs about how Isaac lost in the final and he's a crybaby and he's going home without the gold medal and blah, 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 and he's a traitor and all this stuff. And while Isaac's on the other side of the arena, basically taunting them, telling them to bring it on, and like doing all this sign language, like, well, I tapped out your boy in the semifinals, so boo-hoo, right? Mm-hmm. It's the kind of stuff that you don't see
Marigali, too. I remember they're chanting about Marigali.
Yeah, they don't like him. Nobody seems to really like Nicolas Marigali, which for me, I don't get. I don't get the hate at all, because I make a point of never missing a Nicolas Marigali match. Why?
Nobody
because
does. Everybody
freaking
watches
awesome.
The Nicolas Marigali match.
Right?
Everybody.
They're like you love to say, must-see TV. It's like you do not miss it, right? Because he usually goes out and he just tears through people and you get that whole psych-up thing going on. But, man, what is it with people? Why do you think that the Jiu-Jitsu entire fan base think he's a dick?
I don't know about entire, but I think there's a fair
pretty
amount.
Pretty overwhelming.
I don't know, but maybe because he's beaten all their boys. I mean, Marigali's a monster. He's very tough to get a win against, and I'm sure that doesn't feel good.
I feel like it's got to be because he's the way he talks and the intensity that he brings and how he kind of seems to proclaim himself the best. Sometimes I've seen after the matches, right, he can get vocal, so it seems like a lot of the guys don't like that part of things.
Actually, I was talking to my parents about this because they're in the stands too. They I grew up in Orange County area, and they always come to the big events, and they're also confused about the chanting and like the politics.
What's going on?
But they keep up with the news he put out and read the Marigold piece about how he's loved and hated equal measure and all that stuff. And I was thinking about it, and I think some of it is that he's not just talking about his jiu-jitsu sometimes. He's saying, like, I'm better than guys. Like, he comes off maybe saying, I'm better than them as a person.
I'm like king of the people.
Yeah.
Everybody.
I am superior in always. So, yeah. I mean, that would probably make me angry if he was talking about me, which he is, but not directly because I'm not a black belt competitor.
I mean, there's a really fair comment that just came in on our live chat, Victor Doria. Hey, what's up, Victor? And, you know, he said it's just hate. You know, he's a stud. He's doing great. And honestly, people don't like success, you know. And Nicolas now is a two-time world champion.
Two-time.
And most people are never going to become a world champion.
And he made it kind of easy, I feel
like.
He
does that, right?
You know?
He did. The final with Muhammad, man, that was a tough one for me to watch, actually, because Muhammad is a phenomenal athlete and he's a great guy. He's like the people's champion. People love Muhammad Ali. He's like one of the... the undisputed, universally loved guys in this business. And man, Merigali trashed him. All right, I think it's fair to say
Muhammad won that time.
Evil overcame good.
Good,
yeah.
Versus evil.
But I mean, it was one-sided, right? Really one-sided. He beat him bad, and that was it was tough because, you know, obviously the world championship finals, you don't get there by accident. Muhammad put in a string of really good performances to get there, and then for that to happen, that must sting, huh? It must really sting.
Yeah, that's rough for sure. Nobody likes losing. That's what makes winning so great, right? Is because losing is the worst.
But you know, having a little bit of controversy goes such a long way into creating a lasting legacy. People are going to talk about his matches, wins and losses for forever already. And I feel like it's only growing, right? Yeah. He's still super young. He's got maybe a decade left at the highest level if he really wants to. So I can't wait to see what he does with it, you know.
Let me ask you guys something. Merigali this year, did he look a little less fired up than usual?
I thought he, in the Keenan match, that was like Super Saiyan Merigali. He was going wild. And I was like, okay, this guy's...
We have this clip right of, in the very beginning of Keenan versus Merigali. And Merigali went at Keenan.
The first two minutes were just insane. The whole stadium collected on this
corner. He almost passes his guard and takes his back.
He was really, really close to getting his back. Yeah, he just about managed to get out of the lapel at this point here, right? And because Keenan was looking for that lapel immediately, but... He was right on the back, and he just could not quite get those hooks in. Incredible performance by Keenan, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was amazed. And, man, what a commitment to the strategy. You know, Keenan knew exactly what he wanted to do to win, how he had to win, but he had to survive some shit. You know, that was pretty impressive.
I love the way that Keenan said he basically had to fight his evil twin in this match.
It's so funny.
It really is, right? And, man, Keenan... let's put this in perspective. He's had over 200 black belt matches since 2014. He's only ever been submitted twice in his career. Both of those times in no gi, and both of those times by Gordon Ryan.
Mm. Yeah, that is crazy.
So you look at that, and he's in trouble right now, and Merigali's going after him. But then Keenan has never been submitted in a gi match.
But hey, they raised Keenan's arm after the end of this match, so.
Exactly. He got that all-important sweep using his horse's lapel.
That was something that he talked about a little bit in the interview I did right after with him, you know. And he said that, you know, obviously going into the absolute division, everybody thinks that it's Buchecha, it's Leandro, it's Felipe Pena, it's, you know, Merigali. And his name didn't get thrown around quite as much in there. And... I mean, he proved that, and this is what you're talking about.
The
here,
loop
Chase.
Choke. Oh, look at that.
That was slick.
Yeah, he's so
But we
good
definitely have to start talking about Keenan, you know, in that role, you know, there's not many guys who are beating the guys that Keenan is beating, you know, and there's not many guys who can beat Keenan, really. I mean, like the way he submitted Arnaldo Maidana earlier there.
Super easy.
You know, Keenan's definitely. One of the best, and that's why it's so unfortunate that he wasn't able to compete in his weight class.
Absolutely,
because you're right. I mean, you know, who knows? We'll never know. But he definitely had a good shot.
Yeah, such a shame, man. But you know, hey, I'm sure Keenan will be back no time soon. He's in no time. He seems to have rediscovered his passion for jiu-jitsu. Right, I think he's all about it again. Let's hope we see that rematch as well. But moving on. I think one other guy that I really want to highlight as well. So we saw something unprecedented at Worlds this year. We saw the first ever four-way closeout in a division. The light featherweight division, gold, silver, and both bronze medals went to the Cicero Costa team. João, Paulo, Thiago Jorge, and Thiago Barros. Okay? Four guys from the same team. Meeting in the semifinals and just shutting it out, and via gentleman's agreement, deciding how the podium looked. João with gold, Paulo with silver, Thiago taking bronze each. But looking at the performances, I love seeing João on top of the podium, but I have to say, if any of them earned it, man, I think it was Thiago Barros, because he had two of the best light featherweight matches I've ever seen. And I'll be honest, those light featherweight matches sometimes can be tough to watch, right? We all know that. It's one of those things that the smaller men in jiu-jitsu, they're so flexible, they're so technical, they are often just...
Mostly awesome, though, small guys.
Spoken like a true light featherweight. they engage in these incredibly intricate, detailed battles of leg fighting and grips that sometimes you don't actually see that much jiu-jitsu, really. You don't see that much happen. You see, like, high scores, like 6-4, because they just totter back and forth in 50-50. Okay, you want to watch two straight-up wars. You watch Thiago Barros versus Gabriel Souza, and then up against Alex Sodre.
Mm.
Wow. Wow. Two of the best light featherweight matches I've ever seen. And really important to note as well, Thiago Barros is Masters eligible. He's way over 30. He's an older dude. And both those guys are in their early 20s. I think Gabriel Souza is 21. Alex Sodre is probably around about the same age. Phenomenal, right?
I need to see those matches. I was shooting on the other side of the arena. I had no idea what even happened there. So that sounds super interesting to me as a Masters competitor.
Yeah, the Sodre match was sick. I saw that one. Yeah, it's like you were talking about the Jackson-Leandro match. Mm. I completely missed that one. You know, there's some matches that there's just so much going on. Sometimes you just completely miss them.
Wow. But that's the best thing about having the archives. You can go back and you can watch them all.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And there's a ton of jiu-jitsu check out. There really was.
You know who else was impressive there? I just want to shout out that Conor DeAngelis, man. I got to look, but like, how many times has an American won double gold at purple belt and blue belt? Not too many times, probably.
I mean,
and now he's a brown belt.
Actually, it's funny you mentioned that. I'm in the process of a little project right here. I was talking to Hal about this. It's not out yet, but I'm working on a piece tracking 4 years of world champions of all belt levels. The theory being that these guys are actually being promoted as quickly as possible. So you have blue to purple, purple to brown, and brown to black, maybe a little extra time for juveniles. Seeing who made it up the ranks so far. And so far I've only got Robin Boland done. I just started the project, and he took blue belt featherweight or light feather gold. I think light feather. Yeah, blue belt, light feather gold. And he didn't even place for 2 years. Then he took third as a juvenile. And now he took gold. So these guys are kind of tracking as they go through their careers, and that they start very early usually. So I'll get back to you on that question, but I'm sure there are some repeat athletes in that list.
Yeah. Edwin Najmi took double gold at purple belt 1 year as a lightweight.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. As an American.
I didn't mean double gold. Yeah, but gold. But
there aren't that many really who you can say have done that. Or maybe he didn't take double. Maybe he only took absolute gold. But still, it is a good one. Conor DeAngelis. You guys, he really stood out as well. Obviously, not just for his performance, but you guys did that phenomenal interview with him in San Diego just before Worlds, right?
The van life.
Committing, you know, it makes the story even crazier because he didn't even really get to compete this year. He had some injuries. He's moving around. And then he moved into a van to make sure he can pursue his dreams and make it feasible. And, man, it paid off in a big way.
Got to say, that van looked pretty sweet.
Pretty
awesome. He had that big van. I can't remember. It was like a Ram something or other. And he just parks it up outside the gym and sleeps in the van, goes train jiu-jitsu, and then goes back to sleep in the van for a bit, and chains more jiu-jitsu.
The Alex Honnold of jiu-jitsu.
That's a big dude in a van, by the way. Like, that's not a small person.
Yeah.
He bought a big van.
He's a big
guy.
It's true. Disappointing results. There were a few.
Upsets.
And
there
upsets.
There were a few.
Well, one that's not even an upset, really, is Levi Jones-Leary. Double DQing.
I was upset.
That was upsetting to me.
Huge one.
I put a lot of stock in him in my preview, so I felt foolish afterwards because it didn't pan out that way. But no, man, I would have loved to seen him go further and his world
campaign.
I'm sure
he's disappointed as well.
Devastated, I think, is the word.
Yeah, that was you know, a goal that I think we all knew that he had for a long time. I'm sure it's still the goal, right? Changes probably. It just doesn't happen this year. But
what do you guys think about competitors doing that? You know, getting those three penalty points based off of just a double guard pull. I feel it's a crazy strategy. Like, maybe go for two. You see what happens. But I'm not getting three because then any penalty for any other infraction will DQ you.
Yeah,
so
you're asking for trouble. But, yeah, definitely. I think a huge strategic error. But hey, you learn through.
But he's not alone. Right, so why do people do it? That's the question that boggles my mind. It's like,
true.
I see it. You see it all the time, where people will go, "All right, there's three penalties. Let's try it again." You know, like, I don't understand. It'll work this time.
Yeah.
I don't understand either.
There were a few real disappointing moments actually. From and when I say disappointing, I mean disappointing as in like there were some shocks and there were some upsets. And when I speak about upsets, I mean things like, for example, Lucas Hock not even making the podium. Mm. That is a huge upset. In the heavyweight division,
Hudson didn't make the podium either. Somebody I was surprised.
I feel foolish as well, because I called that division, the medium heavyweight division, I called it a four-way race between Felipe Pena, Gustavo Bautista, Hulk, and Hudson. And only two of those made the podium. Fair enough, they made it to the final.
The final,
but
yeah.
Still,
yeah.
The other two, they're nowhere to be seen. Vinicius Ferreira being disqualified for a headbutt on Leandro Lowe.
A blatant headbutt, by the way. It was hard to see from where we were sitting. I was like, oh my God, what just happened? But then you pulled the video and the match is like almost ended. They've been stopped almost. And he's dug in there with his head.
Boom, stuck the nut on him, as we like to say.
Well, just to play devil's advocate.
I'm sorry, what's the phrase in the UK?
Stuck the nut on him.
Oh man, I don't know about that. I don't know if that's catching on globally, UK folks. But that was so strange. And man, what a tense moment too that was. Leandro came over and was kind of talking to Marcelo. And you know, Marcelo's so chill, right? He's just sitting there. And Leandro's like, something
Leandro
follow.
Was
he was just saying, we'll talk, I believe. But he was fired up. Like,
I saw him even walking off later as well. And he kind of got into it a little bit with Fabio Gugel and those guys, the Alliance crew. You have to walk past them on the way out of the arena and stuff. So Fabio Gugel was livid. I saw he was so mad about that. But yeah, I mean, it was kind of hard to defend. Like, it was a straight up headbutt on the side of the mat. So.
Why would you do it? You're right
makes
there.
I wonder if something happened in their match of pants that we didn't see.
Mm.
Because they went at it in the heavyweight division, I believe. Either heavyweight or absolute.
They did and went to decision.
Yeah, it was. There was something. Maybe something happened. Maybe some words were said. I don't either. Because it wasn't very eventful. It was a referee decision.
Mm.
So maybe something was said. Maybe something happened. There was some resentment from Ferreira.
Gotcha. That makes sense. I mean, plausible.
But if you're going to do something, why don't you just beat the guy with jiu-jitsu? You're not going to stick the nut on him in the middle of the match, right? So,
oh my God.
Definitely don't want to do that. Disappointing, Jameel Hill, nowhere to be seen.
Joao. Huh? Both those guys.
Joao, Gabriel Rocha, and Jameel both taken out of Worlds in just the most disappointing circumstances ever. What happened?
Man, appendicitis happened. Some bullshit, you know? Worst timing ever. What can you say? You know, I feel terrible for Jameel. You know, he was just dying over there in the sidelines, wishing he could be out there all that time. He already finished the camp. You know, it's over. He's just ready to go. And doesn't get to compete. Joao Gabriel makes it out to Long Beach, and the night before he's supposed to go, gets food poisoning. What are the odds of that?
That is bad news, man. I got a text like early on Saturday morning, and they told me that Joao was out, that he'd been basically, you know, puking up all night, and that he was in no fit state. And I'd seen him at like 2:30 on Friday afternoon, and I was like, "Hey, what's up, Joao?" And he's like, "Man, I can't wait.
I'm just on my way
to sign up for the absolute division now." He was in such good spirits,
thanks.
And then I don't know, maybe he went to that dodgy Long Beach fish restaurant that we kept driving past.
I don't know, man.
Hope not.
Whatever it was, they didn't agree with him. But the Jameel thing as well was heartbreaking, because that guy obviously coming back to defend his world title, hoping to become the first featherweight American to do, you know, two gold medals. And after, of course, that really contentious loss at Pans in the final to Mateus Gabriel,
right?
That's
the match. Got to see that match again, that rematch. Mateus versus Jameel. Gotta see
really
that one.
Do. Yeah, we gotta see them roll that back. And then for Jameel to get appendicitis just a week out from the tournament
So rough.
He was there. Like, I gotta give it up to him, man. He was there to support his teammates. But the first day or so, man, he was walking around, and every time he was standing up and sitting down, he was kind of like, dude just had surgery.
And he
was like, a couple days later, flew to California. It's incredible. So, but very, very heartbreaking, man. I was really upset to see that. So.
Wild tournament. Wild tournament.
There was some really big news in the brown belts as well, because a lot of those brown belts that we love watching, not going to be brown belts anymore. A ton of promotions.
Yeah.
Just
it's
really
one of the best parts about Worlds, right?
A couple of the brown belt promotions to black belts. I say a couple. They were an absolute ton. Talisson Suarez, Jonas Andrade, Diego Bautista, all three from
all the Cicero
Costa.
Killers.
Yeah, all those. They're going to really shake things up.
I think Italo got his as well. Another
Italo
Cicero.
And
Wilson Moreira got his as well.
That's right. Wilson. Now, this is interesting, because Wilson Moreira competes at super heavyweight. If you've ever met Wilson, he's nowhere near a super heavyweight. He's like the Luna brothers from Checkmat. You know, the one of them competes in middleweight and the other, who's actually his twin and is about 165 pounds.
He's getting pretty big. I don't know if he's that.
He's not ultra heavy.
He might be 180, but he's not Victor Hugo.
He's not Victor Hugo. But I'm not sure if he's 160 anymore.
Maybe not. But he's certainly not like 250 like some of those dudes. But going back, the promotions. As you mentioned, Wilson, you know, he should be going back down to like his natural weight class, which is actually lightweight. So we should see him at lightweight. Jonathan Alves, you mentioned. Israel Souza from GF Team, the featherweight champion at brown belt, he's been promoted. Jonathan Gracie, the middleweight champion from Atos, he's been promoted. Ronaldo Jr., the medium heavyweight champion, also Atos, been promoted.
Victor Hugo, maybe next year. Maybe next year.
Well, you hope he's gonna get it, man. I'm pulling for him. Solo, if you see me.
Word on the street is that we should get some news about that very, very soon. And to be honest, I think it would be hot. It would be tough to justify keeping him a brown belt.
What else can he do? He literally can't do anything else. He's won everything.
Yeah. In the brown belt women as well. Gabriele Pisana as well. She took gold in her weight class. Actually lost in the final of the absolute, but again, she's another one that's been promoted to. That was a pretty good
matchup there over the weekend.
With Yara Suarez,
her and Yara,
they split wins. Yeah,
they split.
Yeah. I'm a little sad she's getting promoted matches. Almost because the rivalry matches. Was just born. You know what I mean? Like she just started getting some stiff competition. I feel like Gabby ran through everyone all year long.
Yeah,
and Yara gets promoted mid-season. Pretty rare, actually.
So she did Pans at Purple, right?
She did. She won double gold at Europeans and Pans.
Wow.
And then was promoted sometime after that. I don't know. I don't remember about World Pro. But then I didn't see any Brazilian national results, so I think she might have missed that. But yeah, debuts at brown belt at Worlds and gets gold and silver. Pretty amazing performance.
That is incredible. That is really impressive. We actually have a full article on Flow Grappling with the various people who were promoted over the weekend, from blue to purple, purple to brown to black. And I think it's really, really interesting. I'm excited to see how some of these new black belts do next year, because we saw this year what the first year black belts can do with Kynan, Mateus Gabriel, Maisa Bastos, and I'm absolutely certain that some of these new guys as well, the fresh blood coming, should shake things
up. You know, some of the best content I think we got, that I got at Road to Worlds, was some of this stuff with Gui Mendes and him talking about these next generation of black belts, these next generation of blue belts and purple belts, these guys who are going to, you know, who have started when they're super young, 6 years old and stuff like that. And that's exactly the stuff he talked about. You know, every year it's going to get harder and harder to win black belt worlds. And I love it.
You know what was weird? And maybe it was just me, but I thought the blue belt adults looked better than ever this year.
I totally agree, man.
I don't know why. I don't know what would change about that. But they were also extremely high level. And then, you couldn't even tell if they were brown belt.
They look freaking scary.
Yeah.
They looked really scary. Those brown belt, those blue belts were incredible.
I don't know what it was, because I feel like I always pay attention, especially when I was a blue belt, I pay attention to blue belts and stuff. But you're totally right. Like, this year, all of a sudden, I was like, this is different.
Because juveniles are always amazing, right? Because they've been training since they're five, and they're just waiting.
Juveniles are next level.
They're just waiting to get that, to become 17 and get a purple belt. But the adult blue belts now have made a statement to me where it's like, okay, there's been a game changer there, a level change, and man, just more killers on the mats, I guess.
Yeah, Alliance guys.
Sorry, I just remembered something absolutely hilarious about the blue belts. Sorry, Rita, I have to interrupt because I'm just looking
blue belt hilarity.
This is hilarity about the blue belt. So the blue belt open class, you have basically three Brazilians and a Russian on the podium for the absolute division. And all of the blue belts except this one Russian dude got promoted to purple belt on the podium. And it's like the gold medal guy, Rui Neto, he gets his purple belt. And then Enderson Diaz of GF Team, he gets his purple belt. And then Rafael Silveira gets his purple belt. And there's just this giant ultra heavyweight Russian dude on the side smiling, kind of like, oh, well. Maybe
some other time.
Yeah.
I assume his coach probably didn't make it out there, you would think.
Russian.
Yeah. But,
That Rui Alves, man, he was sick. That Stefan Banta is gonna be sick in the purple.
So he actually beat the absolute champion in the weight division, right?
Yeah, he beat Rui Alves there in the weight division. The way the absolute played out was Stefan lost his first match, I think, to maybe like the lightweight or the middleweight champion.
He did. He lost to Rafael Silveira, who took bronze in the absolute, who was a lightweight champion. Hmm. I believe he's from Calasanz's gym. He's an Atos guy. Yeah.
But he Rui Alves, man, like he was playing worm guard, reverse De La Worm. Like his worm guard stuff was like next
point.
It was like super smooth, and I filmed like four or five of his matches. He hit everybody with this same worm guard sweep. Wow. And it was slick.
And you mentioned there about the alliance, the project. He's one of those guys,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's one of the Dreammark guys, and I definitely paid attention to all those Dreammark guys. And those guys are very good.
Absolutely. Full-time athletes, right? So
yeah, they took the team trophy. And I actually, I was chatting to Isaac. I think it was on Friday, Thursday or Friday. I was hanging around by the podium. And man, they brought a huge squad this year. Alliance were determined to win back the team trophy from Atos after 2 years of coming in second place. And they did that. And the majority of people understand that the team trophy is won and lost really in the colored belts. Mm. Because the black belts, you know, you get so much. But when you pick up all those points in like the blue belt and the blue belt absolute and the purple belt and so on and so on. So Alliance have been working on this talent development squad called the Dream Art Project, which is kind of headed up by Isaac. He's like the kind of the driving force. He's really like the team captain, shall we say. But I met the backer of this project, and he's a black belt from Alliance team, and we were chatting away a little bit there, and I just said, man, I can't believe that the infrastructure and the amount of kind of investment that you've put into this project, because these kids, they're training jiu-jitsu full time. They have accommodation provided. They have their food cooked for them each day. They have English classes. They get taken to one of the major soccer teams in Sao Paulo, and they go see the team doctors. So they're going through all these physical therapy tests, and they're getting MRIs for injuries and stuff. And now they've just announced they're going to start paying for these kids to go to college.
Wow, that's amazing.
College, not finish high school, but they're straight up going to help them get careers to kind of run, you know, either alongside or providing some kind of opportunity once their athletic career is done. I think that's incredible.
I mean, man, it can't get incredible better than that to me.
Yeah.
Because you look at two guys in particular, right, from the weekend, Tammy and Mikey, and they're the perfect examples of athletes who have made sure not to neglect their studies, right?
That's true.
So Tammy is just finishing up. She's got one more year left, I believe, in law school. Mikey just graduated this year in business, and he's looking at doing law and after this as well. So two very intelligent, very academic people who have managed to prove that you can still operate at the highest levels as an athlete as well. And you have to think that with that, you know, they can go on and do whatever they want after they finish competing, right? Whenever that may be.
Hopefully not for a while, though. I want to see Mikey out there for a few more.
Mikey's got a lot of history to make.
It is important, though, right? I think if you look at some of these guys, there's been a little bit of a criticism about some of the teenagers who have maybe just decided to go all in on jiu-jitsu at such an early age and just completely, you know, like let the opportunity of school and college and stuff pass by, and they've just gone, you know what? Not for me. I'm just going to do jiu-jitsu full-time at 17 years of age. And really, are the opportunities there to support that right now?
You got to follow the dream, man.
It's a deep conversation we're about to have, which level of education is appropriate. I don't know.
To me, you can't criticize people that just go for it, but at the same time, I'm extremely happy that teams are starting to facilitate other options as well, you know, because that's not easy. I mean, running a jiu-jitsu school and academy and being competitive is the number one focus and is very difficult to achieve on its own. So building an entire life outside of jiu-jitsu for competitors and a team has got to be a challenge that even I can't fathom. So
yeah, absolutely.
I'm trying to do that just for me, and it's hard enough. So
they're not the only team, right? Because of course Atos, you know, especially the AOJ squad. I mean, you've been there, you've seen it.
Those guys, they're doing their own talent development, right? And we've seen firsthand how successful it's been too. Mm. Yeah,
and they're setting those kids up not for, you know, to become champions at blue, purple, brown. The whole goal is to make them black belt world champions for many years to come, right?
The one thing I love about the Dream and Achieve program that I've seen at AOJ is
Believe and Achieve.
Believe and Achieve, excuse me, is the way they are already teaching them how to become professors in jiu-jitsu. They have their star athletes running classes or showing techniques at least. They have them on the website.
And not even just like the star athletes, right?
It's true.
It's like they have like from like orange belts and yellow belts like teaching seminars, right?
It's amazing. And they're good too. I remember I learned like a spider guard sweep from an orange belt. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. You know, I'm going to try that. That'll detail with the foot. And wow. That's preparing them for a professional career in teaching jiu-jitsu, which is so important because that's pretty much the main route these guys will go after their competitive career is over. So really like to see more and more of these programs popping up everywhere. It's really cool.
Yeah, I remember Kaio talking about, you know, he's like, I'm not just preparing everybody in the class to be a world champion. I'm preparing everybody in the class to be a champion at life. You know, he was Hudson. Mikey, you know, these are good people. You know, there's more than just becoming a world champion. It's about becoming a as good a person as you can be as a whole, not just on the mats, right?
Nice. So from the guys that we've seen this year at Worlds, who are you excited to see come back next year and do big things at Worlds?
Next year?
Yeah. Whew. I know it's a long way away. I know we got a lot to do in the meantime, but
next year, huh?
I'm looking for Merritt Gawley to come back.
Yeah.
Always excited to watch what he does.
You think he can do the double next year?
Yeah, he's definitely capable, I think.
He said that was his goal, right?
You know, absolutely.
That's why I think he was a little bit less than fired up in the weight division final, because
only just got a submission win. Well, you know what I mean? I agree. But that's when he's kind of like,
because he got double gold at Brasileiro, right?
He did. And he was so focused on double gold at Worlds, I almost feel like he walked away with just one gold medal. It was like, not what I wanted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh. Average day at the office.
Yeah. How about you, Reed?
What was the question?
What are you looking for next year?
Yeah. For next year?
Anything that stands out?
Stands out. I guess Keenan, you know. Keenan, he got close this time around. It feels like it was maybe the right time wasn't, so maybe next year.
Think he's going to bring a squad as well?
Yeah, that's true. That's a very good point. He could have a whole new team. You know, I think that the next few months will be very interesting to see what Keenan does, where Keenan lands. You know, if he does follow through with, you know, starting his own school or something like that, I'm not sure what's in the plans. But the next, you know, six months to a year could be very interesting for Keenan. So I think that's something I'll be definitely paying attention to.
I'm really looking forward to seeing the Muniz brothers next year.
Mm.
So Eric and Anderson, there's actually three. There's Alex as well, but Alex is right now he's a brown belt. But Eric and Anderson, they closed out the purple belt absolute. I believe that Eric was the super heavyweight champion. Sorry, no. Eric was the heavyweight champion. Anderson was the super heavyweight champion. And then they closed out in the absolute division. And these guys just joined Alliance literally a couple of weeks ago, moved their entire family to Sao Paulo. You've got Alex Muniz as well, competes in the brown division. And these guys, they stand out, right? Because they're freaking huge, right? Those guys, they look like basketball players. They're super tall. And
Eric, another guy who double golded at Euros, double golded at Pans. I'm not 100% sure if did he double gold at Brasileiros, does anybody know?
I want to say the two brothers closed out.
Yeah, Brasileiros too. So
I think he may be the only person to do the double Grand Slam this year.
So, and then they close out at Worlds. Yeah, those guys are going to be a wrecking crew at brown belt and then into black belt.
Right. Yeah, so that's why I'm looking forward to seeing them, because, Eric did. He did the double Grand Slam this year. So I think he was the
purple,
only person to do so.
Pans, I mean, at Euros, Pans, Brasileiros, Worlds.
Phenomenal. That's why, because I've been following them for a little while, and those guys are right on the cusp of something special. So
yeah.
Imagine what it's going to be like when they hit black belt. Imagine how different
hopefully the landscape won't be too long, right?
Well, I don't think so. Yeah. Maybe 2 years, but imagine how different the landscape will be when they get there as well. There's no way of knowing. Like, can you imagine if any of the guys who are currently active now could retire by then? We saw three major names retire last weekend.
Absolutely.
What if Leandro decides to leave his mat in the belt in the middle of the mat?
Man, well, I didn't want to think about that. That'll be the craziest thing.
Bushesha, right? I was like, what's going to happen at the end of this thing with Bushesha? I was like, is he still going? But I guess it looks like he's still going. So.
He's still going.
He's got the Grand Prix later, at least, on the books. So.
And ADCC. So, yeah.
ADCC, true. So, actually, that's a good reminder, actually, that there is no off-season. right? Like, literally, there is no off-season whatsoever. If you thought the Worlds was the end of the year, think again, because we've got a bunch of events between now and ADCC. Everybody's focused on ADCC in September, but we've got, what have we got? We've got a ton of Fight to Win events pretty much every single weekend. This weekend, we got a good one coming up. We got Gabby Garcia versus Hillary Van Ornum. We've got Fionn Davis versus Katrina Perret, and we've got Claudia Duval again and Tamara Silva. So loaded with some of the biggest female jiu-jitsu names out there. That's pretty cool.
Great card, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got the Grand Slam in Moscow is coming up soon. You're off to Russia, Chase.
I'm off to Russia. Yes, on Thursday next week. Looking forward to the Grand Slam and King of Mats going down that same weekend there.
Heavyweight King of Mats, huh? Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. So still getting my bearings on what I'm exactly supposed to do when I land in Moscow. I feel like it feels so different. You know, I've been everywhere in the world, it seems like, but Russia has a little bit of an intimidation factor I'm not used to. So
yeah.
Looking forward to checking that out.
Oh, man, I think it's going to be fun, though. The heavyweight Grand Prix looks, so, or the heavyweight King of Mats, we should call it, looks really interesting as well, right? You got some big names in that. You got we've seen Jackson Souza, but Kainan Duarte's in it. Man,
wow.
Do you think Kainan could
turn it around? Dude.
Yeah, you think he could just pick up another big win?
I mean, it's hard to bet against.
Right?
I wouldn't.
Bet he could.
Yeah.
Yeah, you forget that also in there he won the Kasai Nogi World Grand Prix, just like mixed in there as well.
Like a week before he went to Abu Dhabi or something.
Exactly.
Yeah, we got Third Coast Grappling coming up at the end of this month. Don't forget that with Keenan and his very unfortunate rib injury, he's out of the main event with Merigali. Mm. That was obviously a huge match that we were looking forward to. But Clash of Generations, amazing replacement. They got Cyborg to step up.
I love this match, actually.
Let's go.
It's a great match.
Let's go.
Cyborg is tough as they come, man.
Cyborg brings it.
You know?
He brings it every time.
And have you seen the rest of the card for Third Coast Grappling? It's absolutely huge. Craig Jones versus Matthias Deniz.
Awesome.
Edwin Najmi versus Gianni Grippo. Wagner Hocha versus Ethan Krellenston. Gabriel Arges versus Kit Dale. And Michael Perez versus Jackson Souza. Lucas Valente, silver medalist last week there at Worlds at lightweight, versus silver medalist featherweight Marcio Andre. And just a ton more amazing matches all the way down to the bottom.
That card,
you can't miss Third Coast.
Stacked. That card is straight stacked.
Coming up very soon.
Sick.
And then, of course, we've got next month, Kasai Super Series. And we're going to go back to Nogi. Got Dante Leon versus Hanato Kanuto.
Ooh, spicy.
Wagner's got Celcinho in a match as well. Going to be a lot of fun. A bunch of really high-profile matches on that. We've got Jits King in Tampa, which is a brand-new event coming onto the Florida scene. And then in August, we've got Kasai Pro 6, Masters Worlds, Heavyweight Grand Prix, and in September, ADCC.
Let me just give a quick pitch, because tomorrow, I mean next week, Wednesday next week, June 12th, we're going to be also premiering a flow film that we've been working on hard back here for a few months now. I went down to Hawaii for Fight to Win 100 with Seth Daniels and the Team No Sleep crew. Had an amazing time.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Out in Hawaii.
A week in Hawaii with the Fight to Win guys. That sounds
terrible. It was a wild one. It was great. They put on just a lights out show up there. We did a behind the scenes movie, but it's a little bit more than that. It's not just about Hawaii. It's about Seth Daniels' origins of Fight to Win. It tells what I think is a pretty comprehensive story of the entire kind of history of Fight to Win and culminating in this Fight to Win Hawaii show. So
love it.
Definitely, it comes out June 12th. We're going to be doing two premieres, one at noon and one at 7 p.m. You can watch it live right here on the site. So I hope you guys will check that one out. It was fun.
Man, I've seen it. It's absolutely awesome. There's like four different storylines. You get to know everyone on the Fight to Win crew, and you begin to really appreciate the kind of the hustle those guys have. It's incredible what they do. So
it's a lifestyle that they've adopted, and it's a wild
film's movie. A lot of fun, and it gets you pumped to train. Absolutely.
So,
no sleep.
Yeah, we love Fight to Win. So hope you guys tune into this. It's gonna be cool.
It will. Guys, I think that just about wraps it up for today. Sorry if we're a little all over the place. We are literally, our heads are spinning after just an incredible week in California last week. And just so much more great content still to come from Worlds coming up on Flow Grappling I think we talk about this for weeks, right? So much to unpack from the World Championships. But thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again next time.